it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy Mumford & Sons Day at KeyBank Center tonight. And we are just a few weeks away from another big event. We want you to enter now for a chance to win a team-signed jersey from both teams that are participating in the Rivalry Series matchup, Team USA, Team Canada, women's hockey. The next step in this rivalry as we inch closer to the Olympic Games takes place right here, KeyBank Center. Tuesday, November 8th, tickets are available now. And for your chance to win the team-signed jerseys, visit sabres.com/enter. What do you think, Marty?
I think I want to enter. Am I allowed to?
You're not a... Are you a collector?
So here's the thing. I played with Rob Ray, and Rob Ray was a massive collector.
He's
of
a hoarder.
Everything. He's a hoarder, but he's also is a stealer because he stole some of my gear from my, from my stall. Like, I'm like, where's my blue, dark blue blocker and glove that I had stashed underneath my stall? And then I went to Razor's house and it's in his attic. So, but I tried to start collecting things and then I gave up, and I should never have given up, but I have a few. I have a Dave Andrechuk stick. I have a Donald Odette stick. I have a Gilmore stick. That year, I collected a few things, and then I didn't do it again. So,
Did you think the end was near at that point? Is that why you were collecting that year?
No. Somebody told me, do it early on and collect every year, right. And then I just did it for the 1 year, and then I didn't do it anymore.
Hockey insider Darren Dreger from TSN is with us. Dregs, were you a collector at any point?
No, not really. Back in the early days of the hockey cards, I had a few, but then I realized that what I thought were not so good cards, and I can't really think of a good example. Brad Park maybe comes to mind.
Sure.
But if you found a way to clip them into your spokes of your bike, they made a real cool motor sound. So it didn't take me long to rip through a good collection of hockey cards. So no, not really. No, I wasn't much of a collector.
They were also really good for playing, like, instead of playing the bubble hockey, you use the nets and you use the puck, but you use cards, hockey cards, to play, like, on the floor.
Yeah.
So you, like, that was good. But then they would get a really good bend in them, and the corners were wrecked. But, funny enough, my dad tried to collect, like, when I started having hockey cards, he's like, I'm going to go to the card shows and whatever, and I'm going to get every single one of your cards.
Yeah.
That's impossible. Like, I'm no Wayne Gretzky, but still, like, there's so many different variations of cards he's like, this one has a gold, a blue, a silver, a 1 out of 30, a 1 out of 100. Like, he's like, I quit. So he started it, but then he quit also. So me and my dad, both collectibles quitters.
Well, obviously, it's an interesting start to the season, Dregs. In small sample sizes, people really react, if not overreact, to 2 wins in a row, 3 losses in a row, all of that. Buffalo's in the win column after an 8-4 win over Ottawa, a team that is now lost 3 in a row. But there were so many scorers on the sheet for Buffalo last night. Alex Tuck finds himself as one of those players, and this market continues to be interested in what's next for Tuck and the Sabres.
Yeah, and I get that. You know, when you get through some of the mega deals that we've already seen, minus, of course, Connor McDavid, which is the outlier, then there is another tier of these players that need contractual attention. And Alex Tuck is right near the top of the list for me. Adrian Kempe in LA is another. I wish I could tell Sabres fans, yep, they're working hard, they're grinding away on this thing in negotiation, but that's not true. But I wouldn't look at it as a negative either, that they're not in heavy lifting negotiations, because, you know, the club has made it clear to the Tuck camp that they'd like to sign him. Alex Tuck has made it clear that he's open to extending in Buffalo. But you do have to take the start of the season as a factor. Maybe not a primary influence, but, you know, what if a slow start turns into another, you know, abysmal 10, 15, 20 games into the start of the regular season? Okay, well, maybe Tuck's view is a little bit different at that point. And maybe management has to look at Alex Tuck as a significant asset, because in the insider business, there is never a shortage of finding general managers who are looking for that type of player, obviously, in season. It doesn't happen very often in the first half of the year. And then, of course, you look into the second half and you look towards the NHL trade deadline. So I think for the moment, it's more likely that Alex Tuck extends in Buffalo. But let's see how much relief the Sabres get from that one game win over a pretty good Ottawa Senators team. You know, banged up, of course, without Brady Tkachuk. But why can't they build off an 8-4 win? They certainly can.
Yeah, they can. Let me ask you this, though. So Kaprizov goes to $17 million, but McDavid takes $12.5 million. So you're like, okay, those are – let's throw them in the garbage. But obviously the Eichel deal. Kyle Connor deal. Like, it brought the – The market back to a place where we thought it was going to be. So, you know, when I thought of Tuck, you know, originally it was like maybe in the 8.5 to 9, and there's talks of maybe it's, you know, double digit, like 10 plus. Like, where do you sense that the market is going to go for Kempe and Tuck and those that second tier player?
I mean, I feel like it's got to be up around the $10 million range.
Okay.
You know, again, you're simply projecting. And if you're one, if you're Tuck or you're Kempe and you're looking at a long-term deal here, which they would be, of course, you know, you are projecting beyond what next year is. I had a GM suggest to me that there's a sense the cap could claw up to $107 million next year. Well, it's slated for 104. And then the year after, 120. Well, it's slated for 113. And just to be clear, you know, I checked with NHL sources and they said, no, there's no truth to that. That could be wishful thinking by some player agents that, well, what if this happens? Well, the league right now is saying we haven't talked to the Players Association, so there's no reality to that. But what you're doing is projecting. So if you're Alex Tuck, is 8.5 getting it done? When 4 years from now, maybe that salary cap is around $120 million. And the answer to that is it probably isn't enough. And look, there was some pushback. You know, we mentioned Eichel, we mentioned Kyle Connor. And I do think that there was at least a hint of influence. As soon as McDavid got the 2 years at 12.5, that brought, you know, maybe some of the other projections back into reality. There's no way that Kyle Connor thought he was getting anywhere near $15 million. He knew that. But I can tell you all along, that negotiation in Winnipeg was more about what does the structure look like? Is Winnipeg finally willing to give in on signing bonus money, which they did. But all along, the AAV target was the Marner deal in Vegas. Well, Kyle Connor got basically what Marner got in Vegas, right? So that
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That tells me that neither the McDavid deal nor the Kaprizov deal with the Minnesota Wild really had any impact in what Jack Eichel signed for, what Kyle Connor got with the Jets.
Is signing bonus money, because we look at Lane Hudson, right? Like Jackson Lacombe gets $9 million and Luke Hughes get $9 million, but they get $9 million a year moving forward, where Lane Hudson gets, what is it, 12 in the first year, but it's $11 million bonus. So on July 1 next year, $11 million. And then on July 1 the year after, $11 million. So in the first calendar year, he'll get $24 million instead of the 18, right?
Right.
So is signing bonus now back to where it was? Because it went away for a little bit. Like, It doesn't matter on signing bonus, but now it seems like it's the one thing players are asking for.
Absolutely. And look, I think it was reported, but I know it to be fact, so I'll share it. I didn't at the time because I was asked not to. But I know the Winnipeg Jets did talk with their key guys, right? They talked to Shifley, Hellebuck, Josh Morrissey to just let them know, look, when we get this Kyle Connor deal done, and it was probably just before he signed, it's likely going to include signing bonus. Are you guys fine with that? Are you okay with that? Well, because Hellebuck didn't get it. Shifley didn't get it. And Morrissey probably said, well, I'm 100% on board with it because my deal is coming up and I'm going to get it, right? So sure, it matters. It matters a lot. And, you know, to go back to Lane Hudson, again, it was reported that the Montreal Canadiens offered an original deal where he could have got more money in the grand scheme of things, but there was a deferred money element to it. And I know, because I know the agents who work inside Cortex, who represents Lane Hudson, vehemently opposed to the deferral as an option. Mm-hmm. Just, and I would be too. If I were a player, I would want, if I'm in a position where I can demand $11 million or in Eichel's case, 16 and change for the first 3 years, at 4 years maybe of that contract, right? In signing bonus money, yeah. I'm taking my cash now and I'm going to do with it whatever I want, not spend it. I'm saying invest it and do whatever. The deferral option for young guys makes no sense to me. None. Doesn't make any sense. So signing bonus is just the reality. It's like the no trade and the no move clauses, right? Everybody can demand them when you've got a market and you have that type of leverage.
So there are a few teams that are, struggling. Calgary's one of them. They've lost four in a row. We mentioned Huberdeau not in the lineup, so that hurts. But Rasmus Anderson was a big talking point in the offseason. So what does the challenging start for Calgary mean for their makeup?
Yeah. Well, I think predictably we all expected it was going to be a challenge for Calgary this year. But we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. No different than Buffalo or any club that struggled. It is a long 82-game regular season, so we can't write them off just yet. But you wondered whether or not the Rasmus Anderson thing would become a distraction. I don't think that it has, but it can't be moving forward. We wondered where the offense was going to come from. Is Nazem Kadri going to carry that load? Coronado had a good year last year. Can he duplicate that? I mean, they have some interesting offensive pieces. And then Dustin Wolf, of course, has got to have the type of year that he had. Their goaltending in general. And that's a lot to ask because many of those pieces fell into the puzzle last year to make it interesting. And it doesn't look from the early goings here that that is going to happen again. So what we're fixated on, is what is Craig Conroy going to do? And is he more likely to try and peddle off Rasmus Anderson? Not this early, but when you get to the U.S. Thanksgiving mark, you even get to Christmas, and you're by far a non-playoff contending team. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you are better off to, try and move a primary asset. And maybe there is a team out there, I'm sure they've already presented their interest and offers, perhaps, on Anderson to Craig Conroy. That goes, okay, well, I'd rather have him for for a full second half of the regular season. So in that case, I am going to overpay to acquire him. So there's lots of storylines to follow with the Flames.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts that could happen in the next little bit here. Florida, obviously, no Barkov, no Tkachuk. There's injuries. Now, Brady Tkachuk is getting a second opinion, and the word is maybe today that we'll find out. So when the Sabres play the Ottawa Senators next, which is December 23rd, 2 months from now, is Brady Tkachuk playing? Is he just returning to the action? What do you think the timeline for his right wrist arm injury is going to be?
Yeah, I think it's going to be in that 8-week vicinity. I really do. We're waiting official confirmation from the Ottawa Senators whether or not surgery is happening. We'll find that out in the hours ahead here. But this isn't going to be a 4-week deal like Travis Green suggested it could be. Mm-hmm. Now, he was just dealing with the information he had at the time. And we know that Brady Tkachuk has sought a second opinion. But that's an enormous hole. And now you start to question, okay, well, how strong is he going to be for the Olympics, depending on the significance of this issue and whether surgery is required? What does Steve Staios and the Ottawa Senators do? You don't replace Brady Tkachuk. You don't, yeah, obviously. And they've struggled. I mean, you know, you guys saw it last night. Green keeps hoping that the chemistry is going to evolve. They get Drake Batherson back, so he is definitely going to help moving forward. But it right now is chemistry and execution and the lack in both. So Steve Staios is hoping internally that they can figure it out, because there is no quick fix. But I could also see Staios, you know, getting into that realm of shopping for something much bigger up front in the weeks ahead.
Well, Pinto is now tied for the league goal scoring lead with 5. And I thought Stützle was absolutely flying last night. He missed a couple of glorious opportunities, but man, does he look good. And Darren, we will talk to you next week. Thank you very much.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
And we want to remind you to bid now on game-worn jerseys for the 24-25 season. Proceeds benefiting the Sabres Foundation. You can visit sabres.com/auction today. It closes, the auction does, on October the 19th. Back after this on Sabres Live.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.